But we can turn it around. Well, we can turn it around if each of us pledges and actually engages in behavior that will make the biggest difference environmentally. Enough, as someone once said, so that Mother Nature notices. Of course, it won't be enough for Ma Nature to notice if it's just one of us, but if all of us come together and if we can connect the dots a little louder, a little faster, maybe more Americans will tune in and say, gee, I need to do my part. Well, then they'll be looking for this book, a great new book that just came out, and it's called Cooler Smarter, Practical Steps for Low Carbon Living. It's from one of my favorite green groups, the Union of Concerned Scientists, and we have John Rogers with us now. He's a senior clean energy analyst with UCS to tell us all about it and all about greenness. Welcome to the Green Front, and thanks for your patience, John. We had a lot to talk about with Rick Pilz in the last segment, but you and I have a lot to cover as well, so we'll jump right in.
Thanks, Betsy. Great to be with you.
What prompted this book? I remember, I've been on this beat 15 years, so I remember maybe, seven, 8 years ago, there was a book from Union of Concerned Scientists, The Seven Most Impactful Things You Can Do for the Environment, something like that. And I recall from that interview that it was cars, cows, and refrigerators?
Well, so this, what we were looking to do with this book was take an analytical approach to, as you say, our carbon problems and what each of us can do as individuals. So we used the same method we used for that earlier book, which is basically take a model of the economy, look at all the hundreds of potential decisions that each of us makes as consumers, and figure out, in this case, what are the carbon implications and what are the climate implications of each of those decisions, so that we can really help people figure out what matters. You know, what's the stuff we should sweat? What's the stuff that we shouldn't? And as you say, when we did this analysis, what we found out is first, and this won't come as a surprise to your listeners, you know, the activities of each of us, each American, adds something like 21 tons of carbon dioxide, you know, heat trapping emissions to the atmosphere every year. So just
wow.
to put that in context, that's because it's hard to imagine what 21 tons of carbon dioxide looks like. But if you took an average car and drove it all the way around the world at the equator, that's how much you would emit. So what we do with this book is first we lay out a challenge. We think that wherever people are in their lives, you know, whether they're single and living in the city, or they've got a bunch of kids and they live out in the suburbs or in the country, we think that people can reduce, in the near term, cut 20% off their carbon emissions. And so what we do with this book is try to help people figure out how to do that, and by focusing them on what matters most. So if you look, what we found are the three most important things are how you get around, how you use energy at home, and what you eat. So that's not to say that other things don't have value, but really, if you want to focus on the high priority items, on average, those are the most important things.
So it kind of is still cars, cows, and fridge, meaning
so it's
how we get around cars, cows, what we eat, and refrigerator, the appliances in our homes. And
yeah, so that's
Energy Star appliances, shouldn't it be pretty easy to make those choices now, John?
Well, so let's start with the transportation one, because there are a whole lot of options there. If you drive, the single most effective thing you can do to reduce your carbon emissions is probably to switch to a car with better fuel economy. So if you upgrade from a car that gets 20 miles per gallon to one that gets 40 miles per gallon, and you're right, there are all kinds of options out there. I mean, 40 is really the new 30 when it comes to fuel economy. So if you make that switch from 20 miles per gallon to 40 miles per gallon, you're cutting your annual emissions by something almost that full 20% that we're talking about. So that's, you know, in one fell swoop, you could take care of this 20% challenge. Now, even if you're not in the market for a new car or new used car, there are lots of things we can do that we talk about in the book in terms of how to drive in ways that reduce or how to get around in ways that reduce your carbon emissions. But that's a pretty big opportunity for a lot of people.
Okay, next, what about food? And there's some myths in there. For those of us who look at those blueberries from Chile, you know, in the middle of the winter here, and are tempted, I then am hit by guilt. Oh, well, the embedded energy and all that. And how could they really be that fresh anyway? Somehow they are, without chemicals, although they're not usually organic when they're imported. And I stand there, as I talked about on the panel with David Friedman of Union of Concerned Scientists. I did the banana split once. I literally was trying to decide between the ones from Ecuador, which were organic and the local ones from Dole, which were not. Back and forth, back and forth. What's a green person to do?
Oh, that's a great question, and that's one of the things we do with this book is try to bring some clarity, try to bust some myths. So if you're in the grocery store and you're thinking about what to choose from a carbon perspective, thinking about where the food came from is probably not important. So, don't get me wrong. I mean, the Union of Concerned Scientists very much supports, you know, farmers market and local agriculture. But from a carbon perspective, it turns out that worrying about that isn't an effective strategy for lowering your carbon, because it turns out that the food miles are actually a pretty small part, something like 4% on average of the emissions involved in producing that food. So
most of us know eating less red meat is not only better for our health, but also for the planet. What I recently learned is that is true for dairy as well, and I guess that's because dairy also comes from cows, and it's the resources used to raise those cows, that cattle, that really is part of the impact.
Yeah, that's right. When it comes to your diet, the single most effective thing you can do is to eat less meat, less red meat. When our team analyzed the emissions associated with different food choices, we found that beef is among the most carbon intensive foods, and this has to do with the methane involved in cows that cows are involved with. And what it works out to is something like a pound of beef being responsible for 18 times the emissions of a pound of pasta. Dairy is also a piece of that, but you're unlikely to sit down and eat a pound of or an 18-ounce cheese, block of cheese. So
if you do, you'll probably have some of that flatulence that the cows have.
Yeah,
methane
could be an issue for you too. Sure, we didn't analyze that piece.
Let me ask you this. Let's just backtrack and connect the dots in reverse a little bit. I've wondered when we tell people to eat less red meat, is that going to, if that really happens en masse, if America really has, meatless Mondays and everybody takes part, or even beyond that kind of reduction level, does that mean that there'll be less demand for cows, fewer cattle will be killed, fewer cattle will be raised, and is that where we're going to see the benefit?
Right. So it has to do with cow production and just what happens all along the line. But just to be clear, this book doesn't tell people to eat less meat. This is really a book about opportunities, and so it looks as though at those different areas, the transportation, the using energy at home, and your diet, and points out what the highest value choices are likely to be from a carbon perspective. So we're not saying, and we explicitly say this, we have a little box in the book that says, do you have to become vegetarian? A lot of people have, and there are a lot of good reasons to do that, but our answer is no. This is about opportunity, and one of the opportunities is move meat from the center of your plate to the side of your plate, deprioritize it a little bit, maybe think about a meatless Monday. If you're an average family of four eating the average amount of meat, which is something like 270 pounds per person a year, if you cut those emissions in half, that's a pretty good chunk of that 20% reduction. So there are real opportunities here, but it really is about opportunities, and it's about choices that each of us is making based on where each of us is in our lives.
And not to dwell on this, but ultimately, is it about demand? Is that where we would see a reduction in ecological impact? If our mainstay diet included less meat, we would see less need for less cattle?
Right. So, right. It would go right up the chain. Mm-hmm. I should point out, this brings up another issue. If you think about these choices, so many of them also are good choices when it comes to our pocketbooks or our wallets. If you think about going from that car that's the 20 mile per gallon and upgrading to a 40 mile per gallon car, over the life of that car, you'd be saving, if you're the average driver, you'd be saving something like 4,500 gallons of gas. You're talking something like $18,000 in savings. Clearly, if you're making different choices about your diet, you could be doing something that's much healthier for you as well as being cheaper. Same with the energy choices at home. If your house is buttoned up more tightly, you're spending less on heating and cooling because you've done more with insulation. That's good for your pocketbook. It's certainly good for your comfort, maybe for your health. So there are really a whole lot of twofers and threefers in what we lay out in the book.
And what about clothing and healthcare and daycare? Those are three other areas that you say you address. in the book.
So we have this other category. You know, once you've gotten through the transportation, the different ways we use energy at home, and the food, we lump the rest into stuff you buy. I think is our decidedly scientific term for that, and that's that's something like a quarter of the average person's emissions. But it is, as you say, I mean, it's clothing, it's healthcare, it's lawyers, it's whatever. There are less opportunities to do there. You can make choices, and those choices, you are making choices, and those choices will have carbon implications, but we really encourage people to focus on what are likely to be the big areas and the areas for real opportunities.
Now, this book really is a call to action, saying that, you know, you're focusing on America's energy footprint because of climate change, how it's reached a dire point, and there is tremendous concern, and if we don't address this problem, it will imperil all of us. That's a quote from your press release. About this time in 2012, given what's going on and what's not happening to address climate change, if you can step back just a moment from the book and look at the motivation to put a book like this out at this time, perhaps you should consider a name change for your group to Union of Very Concerned Scientists.
Union of Alarm Scientists.
Funny and not so funny, huh?
Yeah, I mean, this book is really focused. We really do frame it in terms of opportunity. If you look at that 20% challenge that we lay out, we talk about it as being meaningful and achievable. It's achievable because, as we show through a whole lot of examples in their book, there are lots of things you can do. There are lots of things people are doing that can get you to that 20% goal in pretty fast order. And it's meaningful because if that gets adopted by enough Americans, it can make a significant difference, not only to our emissions, but because of our role in global emissions, really in terms of the planet. If everyone in the U.S. were to meet the 20% challenge, it would be like shutting down a third of our coal plants. So we encourage people to take the 20% challenge, but not to stop there, but then to take that to your friends and family, take that to your work, to your community of faith. Say, look, this is something I'm doing. This is something I think is important. Here's an opportunity for, at work to save money, at my church to save money, and then take it, obviously, to your community, your government at all levels, and say, this is something we care about. We want you to care about it at the state level, at the county level, the state level, the national level.
That's a very good point you make about, and it's one I often make. I say, go out there and be, green ambassadors. Don't let what you've heard here, if it's a talk or a radio program, stay here, unlike Vegas. Go out there and amplify it. Be a microphone and a mouthpiece for, those in your world, in your community, your family, friends, coworkers. And I think a lot of people tend to feel, it's their personal preferences. If they're going to be more eco-conscious and make these choices, fine for them, but they don't really want to bother anybody else with it. They don't want to lay it on their, colleagues. Why is that, not a good approach given the state of the planet right now? Why do those of us who do understand, sometimes painfully so, what's happening, need to not keep it to ourselves?
Well, so the key is really to tackle climate change, that we're going to need to tackle it at every level of society. And our individual actions and choices, the kind of stuff we talk about in Cooler, Smarter, are a critical part of that puzzle. We do talk in the book, that we have a section called Inspire, Don't Frighten, and really try to give people hints on how you can get this through your friends and family, how you can talk with the uncle who may not be as solid on the science as you are, and talk about it. Really frame it in terms of the opportunities, again, not just with regard to the carbon emissions, but also with regard to the money and to the health benefits and all. There are real opportunities here. They're solid. There's low-hanging fruit. This is something we can do by making changes in our own lives and by engaging, community organizations and local towns and businesses and then the state and national governments.
And don't underestimate the intangible of feeling a little less guilty, a little more self-righteous for, doing something that's part of the solution and not just adding to the CO2 problem.
And it doesn't have to be self-righteousness if you're bringing to them something that really benefits them, not just in the global sense, but again, in terms of their household finances, in terms of their personal health. So really look at it and frame it. I mean, there are real opportunities to frame it as an opportunity for people. And we also have a website that goes along with the book, coolersmarter.org, that lays out a bunch of options for I think it's 20 ways in 20 days. I mean, things you can do in the near term to really get on this path toward meeting the 20% challenge.
John Rogers, thank you so much for this book, helping us to sweat the right stuff, not so much small or large, but just the most intelligent choices that we can make to make the biggest difference. The book is Cooler, Smarter, and I imagine that is available in bookstores. And just in the last minute, should they do an e-version of that book or go out and buy a print version?
That's another one of the things we tell people not to sweat. Don't worry about that. Find the book wherever you can and find bookstores everywhere or downloadable on the web. Thanks very much for your time, Betsy.
Thank you, John Rogers, a senior clean energy analyst at one of my favorite groups, Union of Concerned Scientists. Check them out. They're really doing fabulous work, and they are scientists, after all, and they are concerned, perhaps even alarmed, so maybe we should be, too. That does it for this edition of The Green Front. Check out archives at PRN, also at thegreenfront.com. See you next time. In the meantime, have a great green one.